It's time now to go beyond the headlines. And for the next 2 hours, go where every sports fan wants to go. Behind the scenes and into the practice facilities, locker rooms, coaches' offices, and press boxes to get the info before anyone else. This is the ESPN 1320 Insiders.
Good morning. Welcome into the Insiders. I am James Hamm. Joining me today, Jesse Tapia. Kyle has once again left us this weekend. I believe he is in the North Pole. He volunteered to shave reindeers and get them prepared for Christmas.
How does that work where you're shaving the reindeer to get ready?
He's got to have a fresh cut, Jesse.
I got you. Okay, it's like a haircut. Okay, we're good.
Yeah. Somebody's got to, do the hooves, clean up the hooves.
Yeah, look at Kyle Madsen. Look at that.
Kyle is a man of the people.
Yeah, for all you kids that listen to the show, Kyle's out there helping Santa now.
He is out there helping Santa. They have to bring in, the big dogs. I think it like elves just can't. It's just too many ladders and
yeah. Kyle could have been here though, but he was called because someone refused to go in for Santa to help.
Exactly. So Kyle will be out today. He will also be missing on Friday. On Monday. It's a 4 day job.
Yeah, they called Devontae Campbell, but he said no.
Yes, exactly. We are the Insiders. I'm again James Hamm, Jesse Tapia joining me. We're brought to you by Jiffy Lube, our good friends at Jiffy Lube. We will have a point in the show today where we give you out a keyword for our Jiffy Lube contest. It will not only put you in line for the possibility of winning a $50 Jiffy Lube gift certificate, but also one of our new hoodies from the good folks over at Jiffy Lube.
I still need to take myself over to the back of the building and get a hoodie.
You need to get a hoodie?
Yeah.
They're the nicest hoodies ever.
Yeah, these are the first ones were nice, but I like these ones a lot more.
Yeah, they're just a little bit different. A little different. So we'll also have a contest winner for last week that we'll make sure to announce here on the show. Jesse, I got home yesterday, and my wife had asked me a couple of days ago, hey, I want to put a fireplace downstairs. And I'm like, okay, have you seen the electric fireplaces?
Okay, yeah, I thought maybe because I know how you get down, maybe you got to build a fireplace in your house or something.
No, so one of the first things I did when I moved into my house was in what is now my bar area, we had a gigantic brick hearth with a wood stove there, and I took all that out. I mean, it was like thousands of pounds of brick. And then we actually had another area in our downstairs where we had a fireplace, and I took that out as well to open up the view to the lake.
Yeah,
right?
Of course. Why not?
Look, fireplaces, if you walk outside and someone in your neighborhood is burning wood, it's just like, oh, this is horrible.
Yeah,
It's so like 1980s, I guess.
Get a room heater like the rest of us.
Well, that's so. My wife goes, "Hey, I want to order because we have one in our master bedroom. We have this really nice electric fireplace, uh-huh. right? But it's big. It like takes up half the wall. So anyway, my wife goes, "Hey, I'm going to order one for downstairs." So I'm like, "Okay." I'm thinking, "Yeah, it's fine. We can hang stockings from it." It shows up in like a box that I don't know, maybe 2 feet wide, a foot and a half thick, 4 feet long.
Does it say Fragile on it?
100% unassembled. So I spent 3 hours reassembling a fireplace all day long while the build up to the Sacramento Kings game.
Yeah, that's tough. How'd it go? Was it a simple process? I mean, it took 3 hours, but was it worth it? Or was it like, oh, I'm stuck here for about an hour trying to figure this out?
It turned out spectacular. It looks great. Again, we can hang stockings from it. It's like perfect. Sits right in our living room underneath our TV. So on that side, it looks really good, but like with no back. So like getting
on
the ground,
as been told on 1320,
trying to like sit there and maneuver around wasn't easy.
You didn't have one of the kids out there helping you?
No, they were all gone. They had soccer games and the wife had to drive for soccer. So they were out in the rain. I did not have to go out in the rain. So
it's fine. Look at him playing through injury.
There it is.
For the family.
Yeah. You know who didn't play through injury or anything else?
Devondre Campbell. You can go first.
Okay, look, so we're going to get to a bunch of things today. First and foremost, the Sacramento Kings, found a way to exercise some demons last night and beat the New Orleans Pelicans in New Orleans.
It was a little scary.
It was a little scary, and we'll get into all that. But we also have, like the end of the 49ers. The 49ers season officially ended. They still have three more games to play, but I think they're a 0.01% chance of making it to the playoffs at this point.
It's over. You got Miami and then Detroit, and then they finished with Arizona, I think.
Arizona,
yeah. Yep. I'm sure there's another loss in there somewhere.
Oh, no, it's over. It's over for sure. And, you know, of course, they lost 12-6. There's all kinds of things that happened in this game that are sort of microcosms of the season, but I think the biggest thing that happened was after the game. Well, I guess during the game, if you're watching, they show Devondre Campbell walk off the field in the fourth quarter. No one really knows what's happening there, right? We get to post game, and Kyle Shanahan didn't hold back.
Yeah, no one did.
No, Kittle didn't hold back.
I think Travarius Ward spoke after the game by his locker. He let it be known how he felt.
Yeah, so again, if you don't know who Devondre Campbell is, he, of course, is a linebacker for San Francisco 49ers who's filled in all season for Dre Greenlaw, who tore his Achilles in the Super Bowl last year. And Campbell, to be honest with you, the first week of the season, like, you're willing to give him a pass. The second, third, fourth, fifth week of the season, he was so bad that the 49ers almost couldn't win with him on the field. And like, way, way too many mistakes, way too many bad angles, not a good tackler. Just whatever he was for the Green Bay Packers at some point in his career, he was not for the 49ers.
Yeah.
And we heaped all kinds of, like, frustration on him early in the season when the 49ers still had a shot at this thing. But he was bad, flat out bad. And then, of course, Dre Greenlaw makes his return after missing the entire season last night and played way more than I think a lot of people thought. But Devondre Campbell clearly didn't like what was happening to his role, and he decided in the third quarter that he wasn't going to play anymore.
Yeah, that's probably the most selfish thing you can do.
Yeah,
like, there's no excuse. There's no, like, oh, like, I played all year and now this guy's going to come take my spot. Like, whatever, be mad, be in your feelings, whatever you want to be. But you can't quit on the team and not come in the game at all.
I would be very surprised if Devondre Campbell ever plays another snap in the NFL.
I wouldn't sign him on my team. Like, that's the most, like I said, that's the most selfish thing you can do. Like, you're just in going into business for yourself at that point.
Yeah, I mean, you're still getting paid to be there.
Yeah.
And, like, first of all, he should have lost his position weeks ago.
Exactly.
He has been ass the entire season, Jesse. So for him to sit here and feel like he is entitled,
like you're owed something,
and he is owed something, that he should be on the field. No, you shouldn't have been on the field anyways.
Yeah.
They should have signed some undrafted free agent and brought him in and put him in your starting job already. You just weren't good. You were actually not just not good. You were bad for most of the season. But to abandon your teammates in a game that realistically you're clinging to your NFL life for this season, your playoff, any playoff hopes the 49ers had were dashed last night when they lost. And I'm not going to put any of that on Devondre Campbell, them losing the game last night. There are plenty of games early in the season. Yeah, he was so bad that I don't think you could overcome him being on the field. But in this game specifically, Nick Bosa comes back and plays with an oblique and hip issue. Greenlaw plays.
Back off a torn Achilles.
Yeah.
Really not much to play for. I mean, if you win so-and-so games here and there or whatever, like, you have a chance. But like I said, not a lot to play for him.
Exactly. Guerrero plays, who had a foot issue.
Sprained foot, I think it was.
A sprained foot and playing on, you know, they played 4 days ago. So all of these guys came in and, like, this is one last hurrah. If we're going to win, if we're going to somehow make it, we have to win today. This is it. This is our last opportunity, really. And to have somebody walk off the field, just so disrespectful. And to be honest with you, like, whatever career he thought he had, like, moving forward.
Yeah, I feel like that's done at this point.
I think it's done in football completely. Like, I don't think anybody is going to want him as a linebacker's coach 2 years from now, or, you know, a guy who's, you know, going up through the ranks. And how many linebackers of the 49ers helped convert into head coaches and into coaches in the NFL?
Uh-huh.
Like, plenty of them.
Yeah, because when I first saw it, I read it like, oh, he walked off the field or whatever and just retired third quarter. Like, because I saw someone brought up Vontae Davis and how he did that retired at halftime. Like, oh, well, if you don't got it and you're done and you're ready to walk off the field and say you're retiring, whatever, more power to you. But no, he actually just quit. Like, he's not retiring or that. He just quit.
Yeah.
Quit on the team. Like, that's so much worse.
Yeah, it is. It is. It's so much worse. So, as someone who's played sports, someone, you know, who's watched sports for, like, if you're a quitter, you're now branded as a quitter in my book.
Yeah, you can't come back to the 49ers. Like Kittle was one of the, I feel, more optimistic guys and all that. He was lighting them up post game too.
Yeah, absolutely horrible. So
it's kind of been the theme of this 49ers season, though. Like the focus has just not been on winning and I think getting back to the Super Bowl this year.
Yeah, I mean,
whether it be Debo or just everything that's kind of gone on.
Well, and we can just transfer right into that. Debo Samuel, of course, had sat there and, like, I don't know, used social media, you know, used the voice of the media.
The complete wrong time, too.
To, you know, voice his displeasure and make sure everyone knew that he was still the same player he's always been. He's just not getting any passes. His drop was so egregious and just, I mean, in a game that ended up 12-6, and he's got a ball, probably at the, I don't know, 20-yard line, and clear running, and very possibly could have scored a touchdown to drop that ball. And then, of course, they show him on the bench. You know, like, there are times when players get in their own heads and all that stuff, but just the wrong time. Just the wrong time to talk. The wrong time. I mean, like, he has not been good. And he, you know, the Debo Samuel that we know from, you know, a couple of years ago, he's just not the same player. He doesn't break tackles. He doesn't have the acceleration. He doesn't get separation. Like, there's too many things that he isn't good at this point. And to be honest, we haven't seen the last game in a 49ers uniform for Debo because there's still three left. But I do think we're seeing the final three games of his career after, moving forward. This is it in a 49ers.
Yeah, I think you'll be playing with a different team next year. This is just kind of the end of that six-year run they were on. Not saying they're going to go to being like a horrible team next year, but like Debo probably won't be back next year. Kittle, who knows about him? He's probably got 2 years at most with the 49ers, I'd say. Like, it's just now it's kind of time for a switchover, I guess.
You know,
soft rebuild.
I'm here for Kittle to play out the next couple of years and finish this thing.
Yeah, I can see him retire at 49, but I don't know like how many years he has left like playing that position and all that.
No, I got you. He has been phenomenal. He was really good last night. He's at like 850 yards receiving for the season. Like, he really has been effective, and you know, he's got a very, very good shot to go over 1,000 yards again this season, which is just, you know, remarkable for a tight end to start stringing these things together. It's one of those things where you're watching a game unfold and there are moments in a game where a player has an opportunity to change everything. And we're so used to, like, this season, the 49ers maybe getting that play from somebody, and then you look and there's a yellow flag on the ground.
Yeah.
And it all comes back. But this one was just Debo just flat out dropped it.
Yeah, and like I said, when you're tweeting during the week, you just have to make that play. There's no excuse at all. Like, you asked for it, you got it, and you missed it.
No, totally. Totally. That's not all the bad from the game. I guess we can just like put them all in one bucket here. I thought Brock Purdy, we've been nice to Brock plenty of times here on the show. I believe that Brock Purdy is a very good quarterback. But when the chips were down, the passes, he missed short on a couple of deep balls. He missed long on a deep ball where he had Juwan Jennings heading towards the corner. And realistically, if you threw that ball like 5 yards less and made it a jump ball situation, you're probably going to win that.
Yeah.
But he missed the throws he had to make in a game where, you know.
You buy into that narrative that he can't throw in the rain, throw in the elements and all that?
Well, I mean, if that's what the numbers say, that he can't throw in the elements, I'm not. I kind of believe a little bit of it.
Yeah, yeah.
But at a certain point in your career, you have to learn how to
well,
do it.
Well, if you're going to be talked about, because I feel like with 49ers fans, and we could say most media too, I think going into this season, it was kind of like, all right, like Brock Purdy could be, I don't want to say top five, but like just kind of around that upper echelon. But like this year, he just didn't prove it, I don't think.
No,
he's a very good quarterback. He's a great quarterback, but he's just not. He shouldn't be the highest paid quarterback in the league, I'll say that.
No, I totally agree. I totally agree. I think he's got some work to do as far as like we'll dive into this deeper a little bit later in the show about where his career path is going and sort of what the dollar amount you're gonna have to pay him moving forward. But I just don't get, you know, like, it didn't look like the ball slipped. The ball doesn't slip and you throw a ball 45 yards instead of 40 and you get picked off late in the game.
Yeah.
That just cost your team.
If you're going to be the guy, you can't do that.
No, I totally agree.
You need to elevate others and, like, you elevate everyone else around you.
Yeah. And hopefully he figures out a way to do that. I think, you know, getting the whole team back together, getting Ayuk back next season, you know, like, whatever it is, the players that you're going to have to piece around him, McCaffrey back, it will help him look better. But I think when you look around and everyone says, well, look, one of the reasons why he's so good is because of the cast around him. And then the cast around him falters all season, you know, whether it's Debo not being the same player he was before, or whether it's McCaffrey missing, you know, playing, what, 3 weeks? Same with Ayuk going down with the injury. Yeah, so, like, we did get to see what this looks like without him, and it's not really fair because...
Ricky Pearsall missed half the season.
No, that's true. It's not really fair to, like, say, hey, this is what he looks like without all those weapons, because the 49ers have spent so much on those weapons, it's not like they could replace any of those guys with somebody else, and it's not like they did. It's not like they went out and even signed anybody or traded for anybody at the deadline to help their receiving core. So at some point you do have to, you know, kind of the give and take of this, and how much is it, you know, party, and how much is it the surrounding cast. But I feel like we walked into the season wanting to know a lot of answers, and we're going to walk out of it having a lot more questions.
That's how I feel too.
Yeah. Okay. We're going to dive deeper into the 49ers a little bit later, but, right now, let's talk about the Sacramento Kings win.
Sacramento Kings are rolling right now, James. Rolling.
Dare I say they're going streaking?
You could say it.
That's right.
You could say it.
The Sacramento Kings won 3 in a row. They now have got back to 500. They're at 13-13. I think they're right around the same spot in the standings that they have been for the last couple of weeks, because they're, for some reason, the NBA has decided not to play games like this week. They are still number 12, but they're tied. They're tied for 12th. Tied for 11th, my bad, but they're only a half game out of 9th. They're only a full game out of 7th. They're right there.
Like game and a half out of 6th.
Yeah, yeah. So this is all a good spot to be in if you're the Kings. You would prefer that they're way up higher in the standings, but at the same time, you know, it's okay that they're finding ways to win.
I'm not ready to be like, oh yeah, the Kings are back or this and that, but just the fact that the last few weeks felt as bad as they did, but they're not really far off from where you'd want them to be, that's pretty encouraging, I think.
No, I think so too. Like, there were plenty of things that went right in the game last night, but also, like, you walked into a game hoping that you would get something from your bench, and you got nothing. You walked into the game hoping that... you would have some shooting carryover. Kevin Huerter goes like 1 of 8 from 3. Malik Monk can't shoot at all, goes 1 of 5 from 3. De'Aaron Fox, overall, not a good shooting night. 7 of 20, but I think 1 of 6 from 3. So, again, you get into a game where some of your better shooters are not having a good night at all. And I think the Kings were gritty. I think when they needed to get defensive stops, they did. And yesterday, I thought that, you know, we talked about this game, and I thought the Kings would win in blowout fashion. I thought they would have another 130, another 140 night, and they didn't. They win 111-109. Are you okay with the idea that a win is a win, or are you...
I'll just flat out, like, yeah, I don't think we can be picky at this point with the Kings and how they win or how they play in certain games. Like, now, at this point, it's just get back to 500, you did that, and now just keep... I hate saying this because it was a lukewarm thing, but keep stacking wins. Like, because you're trying to get back to where you were supposed to be. So you're just kind of clawing out this tunnel right now, and I could give a damn how you get out the tunnel at this point.
No, I agree with that. It was Rico Hines on Luke Walton's staff that had this stacking days idea.
Okay.
Stacking days, stacking wins, all that stuff, which never happened.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of cursed.
It is. It's one of those things that it's like when Luke Walton said, I've got to look at the tape, right? And everybody in Sacramento would groan. Uh-huh. Like, oh, well, or that, or they would take a shot. You know, I think the good thing about this is it doesn't matter who it is. The Kings have strung together 3 wins in a row. And they've only done that one other time this season. It was, you know, games 3, 4, 5 of the year where they started to roll a little bit. Right now, they've won 4 out of 5, 3 in a row, 4 out of 5. The one loss they have is, you know, a reasonable loss to the Grizzlies. It's the two losses before that that you kind of look at and, you know, kind of come on, you know, the Spurs and the Trailblazers. But they feel like they're at least on a path forward.
Mm-hmm.
And there is some momentum building, and they do have some days off here to continuously work through some of the offensive and defensive changes that they're making. Is it crazy that they won't play again until Monday?
Yeah, I don't get why the NBA kind of spaced out the schedule this way. I mean, I guess more rest for the guys is always good, but yeah, I'm not sure why.
It's the NBA Cup.
Well, all right. Well, you can work around it. You don't have to... James, I'm so out on the NBA Cup, if I'm being honest. I could care less about the NBA Cup. Throw another game, throw the NBA Cup at 7:30, put whatever games is at 5 o'clock or whatever, and then be done with it. We don't need to make it this one-night special, watch the NBA Cup or whatever. Like, I could care less. It's not even worth anything. It doesn't mean anything.
I could even, if they would have done like a Thursday, Friday, Saturday here, and given them like 3 days where the Cup semifinals was on one night and the finals were, you know, a day, not the next day, but the day after, right? So you actually get quality play by not forcing a back-to-back. But you did a tournament style like in Vegas and just had like 3 games, right? I would have been totally fine with that. But you're not going to be able to like convince me that what you did to the schedule in the first 25 games of the season in order to fit this thing in made any sense.
Yeah. Owen in the chatty house saying Jesse hates fun. Owen, did you have fun while the Kings were off for 2 weeks, it felt like? I don't know. I didn't have fun.
Yeah, the Kings play twice in, I think it's 11 days.
Yeah.
And they've played once in the last week. And the problem isn't that they have a break. The problem is that in order to get this break, they carved out 7 off days out of the regular schedule in the first 25 days. The first 25 games. And so here we have an NBA that is watered down and diluted because so many teams are dealing with injuries, and so many teams are dealing with injuries because you've jammed the first 15 games into 26 days, including road trips all the way back east for the Kings. Like, it's just been a wild barrage of games where there are no two days off in a row. There is no, like, any days off that the Kings have had are typically travel days.
Yeah.
Like, hey, we need you to play a back-to-back Sacramento, Utah, and, oh, you get a day off. Except for that day off, you have to fly all the way to Atlanta. And then the next night, after the Atlanta game, I need you to fly to Toronto, 1,000 miles away, and play on the second night of a back-to-back. And, oh, I'm going to force you to fly back to Miami to play against the Heat. Like, with one day off, and I guess the one day off is you're getting in the hotel at 4 o'clock in the morning because you've been flying all night from Toronto, and then, oh, back home. And back home, you got another game the next day. So, like, what they did here in the first half of the season, I'm okay with an NBA Cup. I'm okay with them, like, developing some sort of fun thing in-season tournament.
Yeah, because, yeah, just sprinkle some other games in there, too.
Yeah, and we're both soccer fans. We know how they do this in European soccer. They do it all the time. But to pull the days off out of a schedule and just squish it down, it's just so incredibly irresponsible.
Yeah.
Like, you know how many players are already ineligible for postseason awards?
Shout out Zion Williamson.
Yeah. Joel Embiid. You know, like, Herb Jones is, like, one game away. Like, there's so many players that are, like, sitting there on the cusp of being ineligible for awards, postseason awards already, because the season has been so, like, impacted. So, I don't know. Anyway, the Kings find a way to win, though.
Yeah, my biggest takeaway coming out of yesterday's game is that I see light at the end of the tunnel. But it's not necessarily with this roster. Like, I think I came coming out of that game, seeing how the bench performed, like, Monty McNair's going to have to make some moves to shape up the bench a bit.
Yeah, so...
You can't count on them right now at all.
To get to Jesse's point, the bench scored a total of 9 points last night. Yes. 7 of those came from Kevin Huerter. And just to put it in perspective, even Kevin Huerter really struggled to get those 7 points. He was 2 of 10 from the field and 1 of 8 from 3. So he hit 1 3. He had a couple of he had one other shot that he made, and then he had two free throws, and that's how he got to 7 points. And then outside of that, Keon Ellis did not hit a shot, but Keon Ellis in 20 minutes went 0 for 3, 0 for 2 from 3, and then hit a pair of free throws to get to his 2 points. You can't survive like that, Kyle. Kyle, I called you Kyle. You can't survive like that, Jesse. Yeah. You can't survive like that,
Jesse. I do
look
like Kyle Madsen a little bit, but
hiding.
It's not sustainable at all. And honestly, all you're looking from the bench is just consistency at this point. Like we talked about it before the show, like Kevin Huerter gave him 26, I think the other day, 17, and then he went back down to 7. Like that's great, but maybe you can just give me 10 to 13 every game.
Yeah, let me be able to write something in pen.
Mm-hmm.
Let me, like, even if it's 10 points, let me write something in pen for you. 10 points for you, 7 points for you, and 6 points for you. And that's all I need. And then I'm hoping that I can get a variance, like every once in a while you can go up from there, right? You can have a 20-point game and it'll skew the numbers a little bit. But what I can't do is not know if I'm going to have any bench scoring at all walking into a game. And, you know, for Mike Brown, everyone will say, well, you just keep playing the players too much. It's like, what is Mike Brown supposed to do?
Yeah, he doesn't really have a choice at this point. Like, it's like, honestly, for me, it's up to Monty McNair to fix a lot of the issues.
Yeah, his bench went 2 of 15 from the field. 2 of 15 from the field. Like, what are you supposed to do? They went 1 of 10 from 3. So, yeah, it's all on the starters right now. Hopefully you figure that one out from one game to the next. But, yeah, there's a lot of things we need to dive into in this game. We're going to step aside here for just a minute. When we come back, we'll get to 6 quick thoughts. We'll dive deeper into the San Francisco 49ers and this Devondre Campbell situation. We have all kinds of things to break down and mull over here as we trudge through a rainy Friday here in Sacramento. We are the Insiders. I'm James Hamm. He is Jesse Tapia. Brought to you by Jiffy Lube. We'll see you in just a minute.
Now, back to the Insiders. Brought to you by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320.
Welcome back into the Insiders, brought to you by Jiffy Lube. I am James Hamm. Joining me, Jesse Tapia today. Kyle Madsen is out. We, of course, will make up reasons why Kyle is out all day long, because that's what we like to do when Kyle misses a day.
Why is he out today?
Well, I mean, I kind of like the idea of him, donating his time to a reindeer rescue in the North Pole.
Maybe the reindeer aren't ready to take him back right now, so he's stuck.
It's possible. It's possible that he's too far away. Yeah. I mean, he was here yesterday. I mean, to get to the North Pole and back, that is an extensive flight, unless you're using, like, Santa's magic.
Shout out Kyle Madsen, wherever you are on the North Pole right now.
There it is. He might be in the opposite of the North Pole.
Maybe he's going to be the next Santa Claus?
Oh, there you go. Maybe he is. Maybe he's a protege, you know?
He seems like a happy enough guy to be Santa.
He does seem like a jolly fella. Yeah.
Shout out Kyle Madsen. He's a good guy. Good vibes.
He is a good guy. He's all vibes. Yeah. But the show must go on, Jesse. And we've got to get to 6 quick thoughts.
How'd yesterday's Kings game go? Kings insider James Hamm has 6 notes you need to know. Here are James Hamm's 6 quick thoughts.
All right, let's get to number 1, Jesse. There's the bell. Sabonis dominated. When you have a big man that can notch a double-double with 8 minutes left in the second quarter, you should probably win that game. And you should probably win it handily. Sabonis put up 32 points, 20 rebounds, 3 assists. I thought he was absolutely spectacular. I would have loved to have seen him really get a whole lot more opportunity and play even more and get the ball even more. I could have eased him going for 40 last night, but that's what's going to happen when you run a rookie out there against a guy who is like not just a seasoned veteran, but an all NBA player.
Yeah, I was looking at it yesterday, and like 32 and 20 is amazing. There's nothing really else you can say about it, but he's having it right now. Like he's 5 points higher than his total point, his points per game for his career. He's 3 rebounds higher. He's 7% higher on field goal percentage. Like he's just a monster this season. He's probably going to make All-NBA again.
Well, he should make All-NBA. I think it's going to be a little complicated. It depends on what the Kings' record is at the end of the season.
I feel like even if the Kings don't really get this nod, but even if they were a play-in team, like worst comes to worst, and they didn't even make it to the playoffs, I feel like even still he should get in. Give him an Anthony Davis All-NBA nod or something.
Okay. Well, I will too. I think when you're looking at All-NBA, first of all, they're no longer doing the position by position, but they still kind of do position by position. So I think what you'll see is, like, you know, Anthony Davis and Jokic are locks. But then you have this whole other group, you know, whether it's Domas, whether it's Victor Wembanyama. You know, again, I don't think that, like, Bam Adebayo is going to is going to make it back to that sort of tier. But I think it's still going to be difficult because you're looking at, like, All-NBA is, like, you know, and again, Karl-Anthony Towns right now is playing out of his mind. Like, Karl-Anthony Towns has been absolutely phenomenal this season for the Knicks. And he came into the day before he was tied for tied with Sabonis for the second most, you know, raw rebounds on the season, not rebounds per game. And then he had a huge game. Like, so, like, making All-NBA is going to be extremely difficult. But at the same time, this guy should be in the running every single season. And the fact that he's found a way to increase his numbers when I really didn't think that that's what he would do, especially.
Yeah, we were kind of expecting him maybe, like, his points per game to kind of go down a bit, shots go down maybe possibly too.
Yeah.
Like, just not be as aggressive or just as, I don't want to say like a part of it, but just kind of like, as aggressive.
Well, here's the thing that I'll point to. Number one, last season he averaged 13 shot attempts per game. This year he's at 12.9. Now, he's hitting a higher clip. He's hitting 0.4 more field goal attempts per game. He's at 62.8%, which would be a career high. Like, so yes, you're right. He is getting easier buckets, right? The other thing he's doing is he's bumped his 3-point attempts from 1.1 last season to 2.4. So instead of making 0.6 threes, he's actually making 1 3 per game. He's shooting 43.9% from three right
now.
Sharp
shooter.
That's super impressive. And then the last thing he's done is last season he averaged 5.1 free throw attempts per game. This year he's at 4.9, so same exact basic thing. But he's averaging 0.4 points per game more because of the free throw shooting. He's shooting 82.9% from three. So all of these numbers tell you that, like, he's just really refined who he is as a scorer, which is why he's averaging 21.3 points per game. Now, his assist numbers are down and his rebound numbers are down. Well, last season he had a career high 13.7 assists per game, and he's at 13 right now. But the assist numbers, he's dropped from 8.2 to 6. And, you know, last season he was a triple-double machine, right? He had 26 triple-doubles, and the year before that he had 14. Right now, a quarter of the way through the season, maybe a little bit more, he's at 4 triple-doubles. So he's pacing more for, like, the 14, 15 triple-doubles this season, which, again, does that really matter? No. But it shows a consistency with the assists that he's just not getting right now.
Yeah, he's dominating the season.
I think he's been absolutely spectacular, and I would like to see him not only get All-NBA, but be an All-Star this season.
That might be a tough one. All-NBA seems to be easier for these guys than All-Star.
Well, that doesn't make any sense.
Exactly.
It doesn't make it, because All-NBA is the top 15 players in the league. Uh-huh. The All-Star game is the top 24 players in the league, and I don't see a way in how you keep Domantas Sabonis out of the All-Star game.
Yeah.
Let's get to quick thought number two. DeMar DeRozan to the rescue. Man, this is one of those games where everyone in the building should have known how big the game was for the Kings. Like, the Kings should not have had to have motivation, right? We get to the third quarter, and they just come out flat. They were so flat that Mike Brown calls a timeout in, like, the first 65 seconds. Like, I'm done. Like, what are you guys doing? Like, giving up wide open corner threes. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah, just kind of like you didn't understand the moment.
Exactly. And then DeMar DeRozan understood the moment. And we talked about this coming into the season, that the one thing that we thought DeMar DeRozan might be able to do is bring this edge. When things are going wrong, DeMar would raise his hand and say, no, 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 no. That's not happening tonight. And this is one of the few times to see, like, he's done it multiple times where he's stepped up and been like a monster scorer. But in this moment, the Kings were struggling. They were scuffling on offense for some reason. And he just starts walking into three-pointers. He ends up with three three-pointers in the quarter. He should have had a fourth, but he put his foot on the line. It starts off with, as soon as they come out of the timeout, two threes and an and one. He ends up scoring 16 of his 29 points in the third quarter. And he also ended up with four rebounds. He had four steals. Like, he was tremendous. Go ahead.
I feel like the Kings, they did need a guy like this, where if it's not going good, all right, we need you to go get a bucket. Because I feel like even in the playoffs, the first time against the Warriors, like, they lacked that kind of player. And DeMar might not be the perfect fit, where he's like, all right, I'm going to knock down every three. Because to be honest, when he hit the three straight threes in a row yesterday, I was like, all right, what's happening right now? Because like I said, you just don't expect that out of him. But I feel like for what he is and all that, like, he's perfect for this team right now. Like I said, it's not the best fit. I don't even want to say that, because I don't even know if I buy into that. It's just, you've had to switch some things up, but he's just right for this team right now.
No, I think right now, like this, that was exactly what the Kings needed. They needed someone to just say, hey, I've got this.
Because it's not always going to be Fox. Sometimes Fox is going to be off, and sometimes Malik's not going to be able to do it, like yesterday.
Well, of course, and I thought very specifically Fox, which we'll get to in just a sec, but like, he didn't look right the whole game. He looked off. He was trying. And on the defensive end, I thought he was spectacular. I mean, the sequence he had late in the game where he gave up the and one to CJ McCollum, that whole entire defensive sequence was amazing. And he had multiple sequences throughout the game where you're like, okay, he's locked in defensively.
Yeah.
And I think overall, defensively, he has been spectacular all season long. He's not getting the praise, but he should be considered for an all-defensive spot, the way he's played defensively, not only this season, but last season as well.
Yeah, it's carrying over.
Yeah, it is. It is. So let's get to number three. Fox was solid. He wasn't great. He had 18 points. He had 8 assists. He had 7 rebounds. The 8 assists and 7 rebounds, he could have easily had 12 assists, but guys weren't hitting shots, right? The 7 rebounds, tremendous. Like, this was a game where, Sabonis clearly, the 32 points and 20 rebounds was off the charts good. But he also needed help on the glass, especially when he steps off the court. Somebody has to step up and start rebounding. But he did go, he struggled. 7 of 20 from the field, 1 of 6 from 3. He just didn't look on the offensive side like he had the Jets.
He's not going to be able to go for 30 every night or 28 or whatever point total you want to add there. So I think I'm not going to say it's encouraging. It's great to see that he's picking up rebounds and assists and all that. And like, going back to point number two with DeMar, like, that's why you have DeMar there. Because if Fox isn't there, all right, pick it up here and we got Sabonis, we're good today. Because if you look at the numbers too, like, they didn't shoot well from three at all, the whole team again.
No.
It wasn't great. The Pelicans hit 4 more threes than them. I think they had 14. The Kings had 10. It wasn't like this amazing thing. It's just a matter of, all right, we had enough guys to help us squeak out this win.
No, I thought that was exactly, you had enough guys chipping in that you were able to come out on top, which,
yeah.
You know, again, you should have expectations for Fox to be at a level that's, you know, I don't know, whatever level that is, but you should have expectations for him to be able to reach that level. And I don't think that overall he felt like he was, you know, that level of player last night, but he did have some moments.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's what you're hoping for. Like, even if you are struggling, figure out a way. And not only that, figure out a way to be productive in other ways. And that's what I think Fox was when you tack in the 8 assists and the 7 rebounds. So not bad stuff. What do we got for number 4? Keegan Murray woke up. Keegan Murray got the first shot of the game and he bricked a 3. And I always worry, like, when the Kings do that, when they intentionally try to get someone going and then it doesn't work out right away, sometimes they go away from it. Sometimes that player sort of goes into a shell. And I thought Keegan did do that for a while. He ended up getting a couple of early fouls on some really bad, like, closeouts. Like, he kept closing out in the wrong way. And then as soon as he would close out, they would pump fake and then go right into his body and get foul calls. So he ended up with 3 fouls early. And then he just recovers. And Jesse, this is exactly who we wanted Keegan Murray to be this year. He finishes the game with 18 points. and 9 rebounds. So the 9 rebounds I'm going to set aside for a sec. But he goes 7-14 from the field. That's perfect. He goes 3-7 from three. That's perfect.
Yep.
This is exactly the player that the Kings need him to be for 82 games.
Over his last five, he's got 13 points per game, 8.6 rebounds, 38% from three, and then 49% from the field. Kings are 4-1.
Okay.
Yeah, he's stepping it up, and the Kings are, well, not saying like directly because of him, but like, when Keegan Murray plays well, the Kings are going to have a better chance at winning.
No, totally. And, you know, the one game that he didn't have big numbers, I think he ended up with 5 points in one of those games, but he won the defensive player of the game from the team. It's because he was very, very good defensively. And I thought last night he was good defensively as well, but the 9 rebounds is something that I don't think any of us expected. Even when he was coming into the draft, you know, there are certain things that he was doing that you could look at and say, okay, that's repeatable at the NBA level. I thought, you know, he would be able to shoot to three, which has been hit and miss over the last year. But he would be able to score, and his rebounding numbers for a college player at like 8 point something, that didn't look like it would translate. It would be more like 6.5, 6. And then the shot blocking, he was at like 1.8 at the college level, 1.6 or 1.8 at the college level. I'm like, that's not going to happen, because basically he just would go under the basket and be a weak side shot blocker the whole time. The NBA level, you try to do that and they're going to hit a corner three on you where you're supposed to be standing the whole time.
Yeah.
So I think he's been really good. He's been better defensively than anyone thought he would be. But the rebounding numbers for right now, he's already pushing like his double-double numbers from last season.
Are we ready to say he's came out of a slump? Started off the season playing poorly, which, call it what it is. Played poorly to start the season. You think he's finally figured it out?
I need 5 more of these games.
Gotcha.
Yeah, I'm not there yet. Like, he has to find ways to be productive, especially if the Kings are going to run a bench unit sometimes with Keegan and De'Aaron and then 3 other guys, right? I need him to be the second scorer in that group all the time. And so there's a reason why you don't have a bunch of points off the bench for this team, but having 9 is unacceptable. But also I'd point out that they don't typically do like a 5-man bench unit.
Yeah.
It's usually some sort of stagger. All right, let's get to number 5. Kevin Huerter and Malik Monk couldn't shoot. They combined to go 4-21 from the field, 2-13 from 3. The one thing I would point out is, like, you add those numbers. So if we're looking at the 2-13 from 3, throw in De'Aaron Fox's 1-6 from 3, right? So those three go 3-19. The reason why the Kings didn't blow out the Pelicans, didn't put up, you know, I don't know, 125 points, is right there. It's those three guys not hitting their 3-point shots. And you don't have other players on this roster that can step up and hit threes at like a high enough clip. So even if you look at what DeRozan did, you know, again, DeRozan has one of his best 3-point shooting nights of the season. He goes 3-3. That's great. Domantas Sabonis goes 1-1. It's about the volume.
Yeah, it's not going to cut it.
Yeah, those guys were perfect. They hit all 4 of their shots. The problem is it was only 4.
Yeah, great. We got 12 points.
Yeah, exactly. So and then to have Keegan Murray go 3-7, that's great too. That's actually a good number. I would like to see him go, you know, 4-9 and knock it up a couple of ticks there. But that's okay. That's a good number. But when you have the other group of players, you know, when your starting backcourt goes 2-11 from 3 and you still find a way to win, that's pretty strong. Especially, you know, when you have Kevin Huerter coming off your bench as your primary 3-point weapon off the bench and he goes 1-8. So again, those guys go 3-19, throwing Keon Ellis going 0-2. Those 4 guys go a whopping, you know, 3-21 from behind the arc. That's where you didn't get separation.
Yeah. Yesterday is one of those nights where it's honestly just a good thing that you ran into the Pelicans on that day. Because looking at the numbers, it's probably not a game you're going to take from many other teams in the league.
No, that's true. But it's also, it's one of those nights where you've got to find other ways to win. Mm-hmm. And in all honesty, the reason why he found other ways to win is because while Malik Monk was going 2-11 from the field, he also had 9 assists and 4 rebounds. And he also had the biggest steal of the game. He had a block, but his steal late is what sealed the what got you the win.
Yeah, Kings forced 17 turnovers in that one yesterday.
Yeah, they forced 17 turnovers. They actually had 11 steals in that game. So of the 17 turnovers, 11 of them were straight up steals. And the other point that I would make about Kevin Huerter is Huerter did the same thing. Huerter had three steals in that game, and he had three rebounds and an assist, and he played almost 28 minutes. The fact that he didn't hit his shots, but just ran a negative three, like you can live with a negative three, because I thought he was active, and I thought the second he steps on the court, the offense goes faster. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He's like, everything's moving faster. You're like, hey.
Kevin is a good NBA player. It's just we need the buckets just consistently this time.
No, I totally agree. Okay, let's get to our final thought. You finally beat the Pelicans.
Beat the boogeyman.
That is the boogeyman. They went 0-6 last season, including the in-season tournament, and they got bumped out of the playoffs because of that team.
The game probably shouldn't even have been that close either. Just C.J. McCollum decided to be a mean guy yesterday in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, but that was the only way they were going to beat you.
Exactly. Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, the Kings probably could have won by a lot more if not for C.J. just going nuclear in that fourth. Like, they didn't shoot the ball well at all, but they had a handle on the Pelicans, it felt like, in that second half.
Did you ever feel like they were going to lose that game?
Once they got going in the third quarter, no.
No. I thought they were fine. Either.
Yeah. First half was a little weird because it was like the Pelicans were keeping it close. Maybe on me for expecting a little bit of a blowout, I guess, just or expecting them to create some distance. But yeah, once they got going in the third quarter, I felt pretty good about their chances.
No, I did too. And, you know, again, we can talk about things. You know, we bring this number up all the time. The Kings had 24 assists last night. They only shot 39.8% from the field, and they hit 10 of 33 from three. So the fact that you were able to still get 24 assists means that the ball was moving, that you were finding guys on back cuts, that you were like helping each other try to get open shots. The fact is that, you know, again, when you got four guys who go 3 of 21 from three, that's where your system. If they go 6 of 21 from three because of the Kings' offense, you would have had, you know, three more assists tacked onto that number. And without any question, because almost every single three-point shot the Kings get is an assisted basket.
Yeah, Johnny, do it in the chatty houses. CJ McCollum's got some voodoo going on against the Kings, and it's wild. Is CJ McCollum like the biggest Kings killer?
I don't know if he's...
He doesn't miss. Like, it was a point. It's like, all right, we got the Pelicans. It's over. And it's like, oh, no, here's CJ McCollum. Just kind of watching in the rearview mirror.
I don't know if he's the biggest Kings killer, but it's close. And you know the story there, right? He believed...
With his draft process and all that, draft day process?
He believed he was being drafted by the Kings.
Yeah, there's a few of those.
They snuck him in for a third workout, like, on the Monday before, like, a Wednesday night draft or Thursday night draft. Like, they had him in for a third workout. He thought he was going to Sacramento.
These pros are psycho. They won't forget stuff like that. Like, well, CJ McCollum probably literally came up to his locker yesterday. He's like, yep, remember the one time the Kings passed on you? Talking to himself. He's like, let's go.
No, I've talked to him in the locker room about this. Like, I have. I've talked to him multiple times in the locker room. And Damian Lillard will tell you the same thing. Damian Lillard thought he was going to Sacramento. I was told the night before Damian Lillard was a pick.
Uh-huh.
And then Thomas Robinson dropped, and they drafted Thomas Robinson instead, which ends up being one of the worst NBA draft gaffes of all time. But that was all on Dion Waiters. Dion Waiters like somehow moved from like the mid 20s to number four in the draft, like in the last 2 days before the draft, and he didn't work out for anybody.
If not for Dion Waiters.
Yep. If not for Dion Waiters. Well, the Kings had also drafted Jimmer the year before.
We don't have to talk about that, James.
Yeah, I know.
You blame it on Dion Waiters.
I know. We'll just blame it on Dion Waiters. I think Dion Waiters can be blamed for a lot of things in the NBA, so we'll just leave it right there. It's totally fine. We mentioned this during the six quick thoughts, but what were your thoughts on Keegan? Like, how do we get that Keegan every night?
You just, I guess, let him be. Because, like I said, now he's done it over the course of five games. So, like you said next, just do it over the course of the next five, and I think we're good. Like, because going back to his, I think it was during practice when he was talking to you guys, he just kind of seemed like, yeah, I'm not worried. I'm not shooting it well, but, like, I'll get going eventually and all that. Like, it was kind of like, I'm not worried, so we don't need to be worried. And since then, he's kind of coming out of that slump, I feel. Like, we don't have to say he's back or anything like that, but he's just keep doing what he's been doing at this point.
Yeah, I think he said, yeah, I'm not worried.
Exactly.
I'm in a good place right now.
If you close your eyes, you can't tell if it's James or Keegan.
I'm in a good place right now, and, you know, I'll be fine. I've had shooting slumps before in my career, and this is just one of those moments. And
you got the cadence going on, too.
I'll be fine.
That's good stuff. We need to get you and Kenny, and we had to get some video or bit going on with you guys' impersonations.
Either way, I think this might be, again, the secret to the Kings' success this season is Keegan has to be that guy.
Yeah, Keegan can't just be a role player on the Kings. It's either you're one of the guys who's here day in and day out, or we're just going to struggle.
Yeah, I totally agree. Now, what do you make of Mike Brown calling a timeout like seconds in the second half?
Much needed, I think. Because like I said, or like we were talking about earlier, it kind of felt like they didn't understand the moment, or they just didn't come out the way they needed to. This wasn't a game you could let slip away, and it kind of felt like it was getting towards that. So I'm good with Mike calling timeout, like, hey, focus up, and they did after that.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I also think that
it's kind of a first-year Beam team type thing, but they needed it yesterday.
It's funny. We haven't seen it since year one, mm-hmm. where he calls a timeout quick. I'm here for the Mike Brown quick timeout.
Yeah.
Like, I always enjoy a quick timeout by Mike Brown. One of the reasons he doesn't do it now is because of the challenges, because you don't want to burn your timeouts too early, because you have to take mandatory timeouts for TV, and they switch back and forth between the you know, home team and visitor. So there's always one at like the 9 minute mark and like the 3 or 4 minute mark of a quarter where they're mandatory. So one of your timeouts is going to that all the time. And then what you're hoping for is that your team doesn't need a timeout 55 seconds into a half, but
things happen.
Hey, yeah. Like, call it. I'm fine. I was like, hey, that is exactly what I would have done.
Yeah.
Like, man, your team just came out flat. Like, what are you doing?
It's a good coaching move right there. Like I said, it literally helped, because after that they kind of snapped into it and were ready to go.
I'm either that, or I'm just sitting there yelling and screaming like a crazy person on the side.
Yeah,
I mean, we talked about it. I got a yellow card.
I heard. I wasn't here like when you do it, but I heard you talking about it.
Yeah, I did get a yellow card, so I would have been yelling and screaming.
It's all good.
Yeah.
Shout out to James Hamm picking up yellows.
There we go. And that's from the stands.
Oh yeah, no, yeah, I know
I
that.
Was not coaching. Yeah,
it's all right. I'm passionate, James.
That's right. And then the one last thing, like, how do you fix a bench? Like, we've got 45 seconds here. How do you fix a bench, Jesse?
You do it by calling some other GM and tell him, hey, I would like your players. I will give you some of my players and these first round picks or second round picks. What would you like? That's how you fix it.
That's it.
I'm past like internal development or guys figuring it out. I need someone else to help me out.
Well, that, and you know, I think one of the problems that I have is that if you're expecting Keon Ellis to be that guy that uh-huh. all of a sudden comes off the bench and scores a bunch, like, you're miscasting him.
Yeah, that's not him.
That is not him, right? And that's why he was the starter for a portion of the season. And it's why you held Malik Monk back, so you didn't have a night where your bench scores 9 points. Like, I get all of it. Now, you had to make a change. You got to find other ways.
Yeah.
And I don't know if Doug McDermott, you know, coming off the bench is going to make that kind of impact. We saw the one night where he has 18 points in 9 minutes or whatever. But I certainly, like, you've got Jay Crowder hiding on the bench. You can't expect that from Jay Crowder. You've got Orlando Robinson. You've got Alex Len. You've got Colby Jones. You can't expect these guys to be something they are not. And so for right now, like, you got to go outside and look for somebody.
Yeah, I think that's just the next move at this point.
No, I totally agree. All right, we're going to step aside. When we come back, we've got our number two, and we'll dive deep into this San Francisco 49ers situation. Of course, if you missed it, Devondre Campbell decided to just walk off the field last night, and I think he will be walking out of the San Francisco 49ers locker room today without a paycheck coming. Because that's kind of what happens when you decide to quit on your team. We'll talk about that. We'll dive a little bit deeper into the Sacramento Kings game. I am James Hamm. He's Jesse Tapia. We are brought to you by Jiffy Lube here on the Insiders on ESPN 1320. See you in just a sec.